My mother's attitude was very open. I can remember a lady that worked for our next door neighbor. She was her maid. Her name was Rebecca. And mother having Rebecca over, sitting at the table and discussing things and have lunch with her and expressing deep caring for Rebecca. And Rebecca was very much a lovely person. But my father had some very racially prejudiced views. And I grew up with that from his brothers and from some of my mother's brothers and in-laws and things like that. It was just a different time. Growing up in the 40s and the 50s, there was just this absolute wall between the races. And I went to strictly all segregated schools, all the way through grammar school, high school, and even in college. I graduated from Wake Forest before the first black student was admitted. 59, 60, that school year. Now, I would have been 19 years old. We were voting campus-wide on to integrate now, integrate in the near future, or integrate never. I, of course, at that time, I voted integrate never. And I know that I had other people that felt the same way I did because they had grown up the same way. In fact, several of them were from my hometown of Burlington. The one professor that I remember particularly is Dr. Robert Gregory, and he taught a course on British Empire at Wake Forest College here in Winston-Salem. And I took those two courses. And, of course, that involved a lot of African history. And I came under his influence, and I can remember the fact that the Africans were smelting iron while the Europeans were still in the Stone Age. That was one of the facts that we learned. And then Dr. Gregory put together the first African history course that Wake Forest had. This was my senior year at Wake Forest, 61-62. And that is where Edward Reynolds, he came from Shaw University in Raleigh. He came up and visited, and this was a night class that we took. And he came up and visited with us, and he was from the country of Ghana. And he was awaiting entrance to Wake Forest because they did not decide to accept blacks until, I think, like April of 1962. They finally made that decision. Edward was seated behind me, and I would listen to him speak in this perfect British accent. And I would turn around just to be sure that I knew who was speaking. And I was amazed that a young black man could speak with this great accent. And he was very dark-skinned, and he had very nice posture. He was dressed very nicely, and you could tell that he was very intelligent. He had a broad knowledge of African history, not just Ghana. And he was easy to talk to. And we talked about his home country of Ghana, and the head of Ghana at that time was a fairly evil man by the name of Nkrumah, and Edward made the comment that he could not go back to Ghana because he was on a bad list with the government there. I can remember in 1963 when I was traveling for my uncle, I had a black man in Burlington repair my car. His name was Jim Robinson. I can see him now with his overalls on. He'd always come out and show me everything that he did and tell me all the details. And, you know, I trusted him implicitly to do those repairs. And it was a very nice relationship that we had, a very good business relationship. I found out from my parents that he had been sick and had been in the hospital in Durham. But I found out after he had passed away, and I was very sad. My dad, he made the comment that Jim was a fine guy who knew his place, and I didn't think Jim's place was any different than ours. So I was a little bit offended by that statement. And I made the comment that Jim's place would be if you had a line getting into heaven, he'd be at the front. Studying history courses, religion courses that I had here at Wake Forest, I changed in a short number of years, really. You know, when Jesus said, love your neighbor, he didn't put any restrictions on it. He didn't say unless he or she is black, yellow, red, or gay.